How you doing, Andy?
All right, man. I'm good. What's going on?
Not much. I'm sitting here ready to talk to you about some stuff.
Yeah. It's been a while.
It has, man. I think the last time I saw you was, yeah, probably that random Gonzo show in Leesburg, I think.
Yeah, and before that, God only knows.
probably 15 years.
I don't know if you saw, recently I got an invite on Facebook. There's like a 40th anniversary of Sunrise Valley.
Is there really?
Yeah. Yeah, and so everybody's been posting different, like, flash pictures and things like that. So I've just been amused going back and looking at photos from Sunrise Valley of everybody and just, like, how old those photos look.
Yeah. Well, we're not spring chickens anymore, man.
No. But, sometimes it just doesn't seem like that long ago. But, kind of looking at those photos now, it's almost like when I would look at my parents' like black and white photos of their elementary school classes when I was a kid. And I would just think like, oh my God, that's so ancient. I mean, that adds a lot later because they were black and white.
Yes, that's true. But I see it. I know exactly what you're talking about, because even though the pictures from our youth are in color, they still have that really old looking sort of grainy, bad Polaroid / low resolution look to them. So yeah, I hear you, man. It's true.
Exactly.
Time flies.
Photography has changed that much,
Mm-hmm.
And the fashion has changed that much too. Sometimes like, The girls, the dresses that they're wearing and stuff look like something from Little House on the Prairie.
Yeah. It's true.
They're ridiculous.
It's a very different, very different time, that's for sure. The fashion has changed a lot. That's definitely true.
Yeah. So, I do remember, though, that back when we were in elementary school, it seemed like there was a lot of sort of musical education and opportunities for music stuff in elementary school. I was in chorus. You must have been in chorus, too.
Yeah. Yep. I was in chorus starting in fifth grade. Yep.
Yeah. And I remember, like, doing the Wilson Pickett, Land of a Thousand Dances.
Yeah, so do I.
That was, like, our big number.
It was, that's correct, yeah.
And I just, I've always loved that song. I've always loved Wilson Pickett. And, that was just, like, that was a really fun one. And I just remember chorus being a really fun time.
1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. Ow. All right. Got to know how to pony. Like Bonnie Maroney. Mashed potato. Do the alligator. Put your hand on your hips, yeah. Let your backbone slip. Do the 1, 2.
Not that I got many opportunities to, say I was buried in the back and with good reason.
Yeah, it's funny that you bring that up, because I actually was just thinking about that yesterday. That's one of my earliest singing memory you know, of any type of aptitude towards music was actually that chorus class, simply singing The Land of a Thousand Dances. Because we had to do some cheesy, I don't know if you remember this, but we had to do some cheesy choreography at some points where we would like turn to the side and like rock to the left and rock to the right and all this cheesy stuff. And, you know, most of the time in elementary school, you're singing in unison, right? There's no vicious melody. There's no harmonies of parts. But I do remember whoever the chorus teacher was back then, you know, trying to teach some of us to sing like the alto part, quote unquote alto, because even though we were all boys and girls, they were all tenors or basses, it was all just sopranos and altos. And I do remember feeling, I didn't know it at the time, but I thought it was pretty easy to learn those other little harmonies. And I do remember sort of getting some positive, like you said, it was really fun. I got really good fun feelings from the fact that I could sing the little harmony parts. And I didn't know it yet, but that was sort of the beginning of me sort of realizing that I had an aptitude to music. And it was exactly that class that, that started it. I do remember that.
That's really cool. I mean, I kind of remember you being sort of, like, there were a couple of kids that were kind of singled out, you know, for having really good voices and being featured a little bit more, you know, than everybody else. Like, you and Gordon Wagner were sort of the two that were always highlighted as, like, you know, these kids can sing. Like, let's put them out front as much as possible. And
that's so funny.
And get some shine.
That's so funny to say that, because I had forgotten about that. But it's like when you mention that, I do have this. It is like the kind of the faintest of memories are sort of, you know, twinkling in the back of my mind, because Gordon and I are still close. We're still buddies. And Gordon was immensely talented in a lot of ways. And that's so funny. Yeah, because we were always really close in elementary school, all through junior high and high school. And like I said, we're still friends now. He's out there in Napa Valley in California. You probably know that. But Gordon was really, that's right. He got a lot of shine, and I got some shine too. I honestly don't remember getting very much shine myself until eighth grade, but it did start back in elementary school. I do remember that. It was a lot of fun, for sure.
What happened in eighth grade? Was that was that middle school musicals?
Yeah, no, it was, I'm sure you remember this, at Langston Hughes, there was the, you know, there was the choral department there, and Miss Legassi was the teacher, and we had a show choir, and I remember, much to my chagrin, I was encouraged to join the show choir with, like, Gordon and Thomas McKnight and all these other people that I had these, you know, memories of, and I guess because you're interested in being, trying to be quote-unquote cool at the time, there was nothing cool about being in show choir, but at the same time, you know, I was anything but cool, so what was I complaining about? But we ended up doing this competition showcase thing in eighth grade at Hershey Park, Pennsylvania, and this is funny because Gordon was there. Gordon was the guy who claims to this day that he knew it was going to happen, but they awarded a trophy for the most outstanding soloist, and this is for 8th through 12th grade, I believe. Like, it wasn't limited to grades. It was from the entire competition. And sure enough, we're sitting in the stadium at the end of the weekend, and they're giving out these awards and presentations, and I'm sitting on these bleachers with Gordon and a bunch of other, you know, the Langston Hughes kids, and they said, trophy for most outstanding soloist, and I do remember this still, which is hilarious, goes to Mike, and before they even said my last name, Gordon slapped me on my back and was like, I knew it. And then they said, Webb. And I stood up, and it was like in a dream. I almost tripped down the stairs because I was so confused and just like out of body experience. But I was awarded this trophy for most outstanding soloist for my solo that I had in our show choir routine. And it was crazy. It was crazy. I had to walk down and pick up this trophy and carry it back to my seat. And that's actually when I thought to myself, I'm kind of good at this. Like, this is weird. Like, I didn't think I'm that good, but apparently I'm kind of good. And, you know, the rest is history, I guess. I just always loved singing and never got tired of singing. And that's why I'm doing what I'm doing today.
Well, I guess it takes, you know, it takes some adults and it takes, people to actually, like everybody, you know, everybody is encouraged to sing as a kid, you know, and there are opportunities to sing, and everybody wants to, like, sing in the shower and, you know, what have you. But it really does take people saying to you, you know, hey, you have a really good voice, you know, or putting you out front or giving you a trophy to make you realize, like, oh, yeah, I'm, you know, I'm not just, like, okay at this, you know. This is something that I have a real talent in. And this is something where, you know, this is something that makes me stand out, and this is something that, you know, that other people want to hear.
You're exactly right, because I never thought that of myself. Like, I just enjoy doing it. I had fun doing it. It came easy to me, which is, I guess, obviously an indication of talent or ability, but it never really felt like work. And I, all the way through high school, I sang in all the choruses, and I did the district choruses and the all-state choruses and the honors chorus and all these different types of audition, you know, quote-unquote all-star type choruses from the programs. And we would spend these entire weeks, you know, and weekends doing these all-state chorus things. And I'd come out of them just feeling like I'd had a great time. You know, it was challenging. It wasn't like we weren't working, but I never got tired of it. I never got tired of singing. And I think that's ultimately why I decided to major in music, was I thought, well, I might as well spend my time on something I enjoy doing. But you're exactly right. I never really thought I was anything special. I definitely was not one of these people that you would see on American Idol or The Voice or all these modern programs. I have never been the guy who was like, I am meant to be on stage. I need to be a star. Like, people need to hear my voice. No, I've never felt that way. Even to this day, you know, and I've been singing professionally for 20 years almost. It's just, you know, I don't feel that way. I just really enjoy doing it. And when I see other people respond to it and, you know, they give me positive encouragement, well, that's obviously very validating. But it was never a personal desire to, like, be a star or to share my gift. It's never felt like that for me. But I really do. I enjoy it. That's the bottom line.
Well, outside of school, like, did your parents, get you any sort of private lessons or, you know, during that time, what were you doing to develop your voice?
That's a great question. Really nothing. My mom, you know, who unfortunately passed away in 2010. She was the whole reason why I sang in chorus in fifth grade in the first place. She literally made me join chorus. She was like, no, you will join chorus. You're good. I think she knew, she could already tell that I had, like, a decent ear and I had a, you know, quote unquote decent tone. You know, like, I had a decent voice, but she sort of made me join chorus, and I begrudgingly did. And then, like, as we already discussed, I realized right away, as early as fifth grade, how much I actually enjoyed it. But, no, I never took any lessons until I guess it was a senior. I knew I was going to audition for, like, the James Madison, JMU School of Music, and a couple other schools of music, Virginia Tech, William & Mary. I had to put together an audition tape. And so literally they expected me to have been, you know, they wanted to see a submission from prospective vocal students of learning art songs and arias and stuff that voice majors learn. I hadn't done any of that stuff. So my mom found, like, a music teacher in Newbridge Court, you know, it was right there, right where I grew up off, you know, off Soapstone there in Reston. So she was just down the street, and she had a piano. She was basically a piano teacher who had some very beginning repertoire for beginning young voices. And I took two lessons with her, and I learned an Italian art song, and I learned some, like, Handel English art songs, and I did something from Phantom of the Opera, and I recorded it and sent it off to the colleges, and all three of the colleges I applied to accepted me, and I'm sure I'm at least on a portion of it is because they recognized that I had some, you know, innate talent that was raw, but unadulterated is what I was told. And when I was a freshman voice major, they said, yeah, you haven't taken any training, but boy, you have no bad habits. And that's, you know, that's, you're starting with a nice clean slate. And so, no, that was it though. I took literally about maybe 3 hours, 2 hours of, voice lessons to prepare for my college auditions, but that was it. Everything since then was me catching up to the rest of the people who had already been studying for God knows how long.
So did you, at that point, did you listen to any opera or listen to any, you know, musical theater, or was it mostly like, you know, pop music, rock music?
Mostly. I definitely did not listen to any opera. I listened to the radio all the time. I started listening to the radio pretty hardcore in like sixth grade. Before that, it was very casual. But then in sixth grade, I started listening to the radio every night when I was doing my homework. I had a Walkman on, you know, on my ears, and I was just listening to, you know, 98 Rock and DC 101 and Mix 107.3 and all those other cheesy, you know, top 40 pop radio stations in the area. But I also would get my hands on like Les Miserables, you know, Broadway recordings or Phantom of the Opera recordings, all the cheesy stuff that was big in the, you know, late 80s, early 90s. But no opera, no legitimate, quote unquote, they say, you know, legitimate classical music. But when I went to JMU, I had to learn real quick. You know, I had to start listening to opera and listening to, you know, vocal recordings of the great bass baritones and baritones that were out there. And yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, I don't know. I was definitely behind the eight ball a little bit. I could barely read music when I went to college because I had relied upon my ear so much growing up. I have a very good, strong ear. So I could pick things up very quickly, harmonically, melodically. My intonation was always strong and still is to this day, I think. It's one of my strengths, is my natural ability to hear intonation. So, but no, I didn't listen to any of that stuff until I was in college, and then I just kind of had to catch up.
I mean, were you jealous of people that maybe, you know, grew up in New York or something like that and had more access to seeing, you know, vocal talent on stage? Or, you know, living in Northern Virginia, did you get a chance to go to D.C. and see talented singers perform, or, you know, was that not until later?
Well, that's a good question. It really wasn't until later, but I saw a couple things in the D.C. area when I was growing up that were kind of formative. You know, I remember one of my earliest memories is my mom took me to the Kennedy Center to see, I think it was Phantom of the Opera, believe it or not. It was like the first big, legit, like, show I'd seen that wasn't like just like a rock concert or something like that. And it was awesome. I mean, it was everything I'd hoped it would be, in terms of inspiring, like, wow, this is neat. And, at that point, I was already really big into appreciating, like, really good vocals. So, like, because you can see performances live where the singer just isn't as good as the recording, or the product just really kind of seems to gets really rough around the edges when they do it live. Now, depending on the venue or like the genre of music, that can be cool, right? You're going to go see a punk rock band, like the dirtier, the grittier, the better. Like, you don't necessarily want to see this nice polished product. But I was used to hearing these recordings, these studio recordings, and I loved it when I would go see a live act and they were just as good as the recording, if not better. Like, that was super appealing to me because I was very impressed with the ability for them to recreate their performance in a live setting. So, but I saw a couple shows at the Kennedy Center. I also remember, what was it? Was it our junior or senior year or sophomore year when the Cranberries did that free concert down on the mall? Do you remember that? I don't know if you remember that, but there was some.
No, but I would guess that would be around junior year.
Yeah, I have this recollection that the Cranberries, it was like a big deal because everybody wanted to skip school and go see the Cranberries for free on the mall. And I think somehow I ended up doing it, but I didn't have to skip school because I was too much of a goody-two-shoes. But I ended up going down there and checking them out, and that was really cool and kind of informative in that, like, I realized how much power, you know, how much influence, you know, a popular band or an artist had over, like, you know, their fans, or even just over the sort of zeitgeist of the culture at the moment.
If you could return, don't let it burn, don't let it burn.
But other than that, no, I didn't see too many live acts. Like, I discovered the Birchmere in Alexandria later. I discovered Blues Alley down in Georgetown later. I didn't go to, like, you know, the 9:30 Club or any of that kind of stuff until a lot later. Yeah, it was really until I was more of an adult where I started to get the itch to go see live acts and live concerts and try to enjoy that whole experience.
Were there any singers that, you know, you modeled yourself after or, you know, that you just kind of, like, idolized?
Yeah, there were a couple. And it might sound cheesy, I don't know, but Billy Joel was a huge one for me. I really liked a lot of his different albums, and because by the time I discovered him, like, the first song I really remember attributing to Billy Joel was We Didn't Start the Fire. I think that was like 90, it was like 88, 87, 88, somewhere in there, maybe even 89. And I was like, who's this Billy Joel guy? And that song was a big hit that year. It was all, you know, about the political, you know, verses and the lyrics in that song. And then I started looking to Billy Joel, and I got like an album of his greatest hits. You know, he wrote songs going back into the 70s, you know. And so I really liked his singer-songwriter vibe. To him, Elton John, you know, obviously is a contemporary of his who's known for his singer-songwriter-y stuff. But Billy Joel, for some reason, I really gravitated towards his stuff and his style of singing. I could do a pretty good imitation of Billy Joel at the time. I don't know. I remember him specifically sticking out as sort of an influence. Other than that, no, I just tried to sound like the nice voices I heard on those Broadway recordings, or you know, I would try to imitate them slightly or whatever. But that was about it at the time.
Now, those guys are both piano players and singers.
That's right.
Did you try your hand at playing piano to go along with your vocals too?
I did. I took about 6 months of piano lessons when I was a little kid, like first grade, second grade. And ironically, the teacher that I had too many students, and I think she kind of had to cut back her studio. And I think she was being nice at the time, because I'm remembering the stories my mom told me, but that the teacher was being nice at the time. She said, oh, I don't have room for any more students. I do believe to this day, I wasn't picking stuff up fast enough for her. And she thought I was kind of a lost cause. But the irony is that I have a good ear, and so I would sit at the piano for hours growing up and just play stuff by ear. And because I could do that and figure it out that way, I didn't have to read music the way maybe another person would to figure out how to play that song. I would just listen to it over and over again and figure it out by ear how it went. And there were a couple of kids in high school and junior high that were friends of mine in the chorus department who were great piano players, and some of them did the same thing. They'd learn stuff by ear. And I would learn from them, and we would just hang out after school for an hour and a half or something and, like, play together on the pianos that were in the music wing or in the theater. And so I did play piano, and I still do play piano. And Gonzo's knows I did a lot of keys background when Jen was singing lead. And I've played piano all through my life, but I don't fancy myself a piano player. I can also play guitar and bass and all that kind of stuff, too, but it's all at a very amateur level, to be honest. But if you're going to sing, you got to be able to play an instrument too to support yourself. I mean, I think you really should be able to, even if it's just very basic stuff. It's always a good idea to be able to accompany yourself.
Yeah, for me, learning to play was always like I had lyrics in my head.
Yeah.
You know, I had ideas for songs. And learning to play piano or learning to play guitar was only a means of just kind of getting that stuff out.
Yeah.
So I, yeah. You know, once I learned.
So did you record? Did you get your stuff recorded or something, or did you get it out?
Oh yeah.
Good.
Well, once I learned a few chords, you know, and that was sort of like all I needed to move forward. You know,
it's
never about really getting chops on any instrument. It was more about just being able to support, you know, the ability to write a song and the ability to get the lyrics out there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's hugely important, right? I mean, you're exactly right. If you have a basic working vocabulary to work with, then you can just, you know, get the word out. But yeah, exactly right. You don't have to have great chops, but you should be able to navigate basic progression, whether it's piano or guitar, and then you can really use that medium to get your ideas out, for sure.
So, how did things change for you once you left for college?
That's a good question. Man, I don't know. I went to college. I really enjoyed it. I had a great time at JMU. I did well as a voice major. Although I can freely admit, you know, as a 41-year-old man now looking back, and I say this, you know, it's been validated and verified through my professional experience as well. My problem wasn't ability. I have a lot of natural talent, which has carried me very far. My problem, if there was a problem, is my teachers would look at me and say, man, you can do whatever you want. You just got to really apply yourself to the absolute. You got to live, sleep, drink, eat, and breathe music. And that wasn't really where my head was at the time. And I remember when I finished my undergrad vocal performance major at JMU, you know, I didn't go to grad school like most of my friends did, especially the really good ones. They would go to grad school to get their master's in vocal performance, and they'd go on to try to be opera singers or whatever. I knew that wasn't for me. I did an a cappella group at JMU called the Madison Project, which was one of the better experiences I had in my entire college career. Wonderful friendships and wonderful experience arranging our own songs, creating the group from scratch, literally building it from no presence to like a really strong collegiate presence for a cappella stuff, which, you know, this is before Pitch Perfect and all those cheesy movies. So, you know, it was a little different back then. But, you know, that was a blast. And obviously the music we were doing in that group was anything but classical music. You know, it was all our own arrangements of top 40 hits or old artists or R&B and blues, you name it. We were doing anything we thought would be fun, barbershop, whatever thought would be cool and fun to sing together a cappella. So I knew that classical music, quote unquote, and following that dream, like my teacher said, you need to eat, sleep, drink, breathe music. I wasn't built for that, and I didn't want to do that. And so I graduated JMU. I came back to Reston, actually worked in Herndon in the IT department for like 2 years, doing like federal and state and local sales for IT solutions in a desk job for about a year and a half. And understandably, after that, I wanted to pull my own eyes out because I was tired of doing this, you know, Monday through Friday desk job. And I moved to Nashville in January of 2003. Yeah.
No, good music.
January of 2002, actually. I moved to Nashville. And my girlfriend at the time was there, who I'd met while I was at college, and I had a couple other friends from JMU that were down there in Nashville. And I moved there with every intention of being a demo singer, a session singer, and doing voiceover work, and all this kind of stuff. And I actually worked up a voiceover demo, and I knocked on doors on Music Row, and I walked the walk as best I could, and I pretty much very quickly within the first 3 months found the inevitable truth in Nashville, which is, everybody in Nashville is knocking on doors. Everybody is insanely talented in Nashville. Obviously, there's a slant towards country music, which I had never listened to at all. But there was a lot of opportunity in the music industry across all kinds of genres. And I spent almost 2 full years in Nashville. I sang with some wonderful random choirs that I found off of Craigslist. I did a couple voiceover jobs that I found off of like random advertisements and auditions, and I was a financial planner for a year. I was a loan officer for almost a year. I was doing all these. I worked at an Outback for about a year. I was doing all these random side jobs when I was trying to make music my main goal. And ultimately, the irony is, I came back to D.C. to join the military chorus, the Navy Sea Chanters, and so I had to leave home only to come back about 2 years later to find the actual job I wanted, which was being a musician full time. And that was an audition for the Navy chorus at the end of 2003. I went to boot camp and right around Halloween of 2003. And then 10 and a half weeks later, I graduated and came back to D.C., and I've been here ever since.
So I mean, had you ever thought about joining the military before? I mean, was this something that, you know, was it just for this specific musical group, or was this something bigger for you?
That's a great question. It was definitely more about the music than anything else. My whole father's side of the family are all military. So there's a long line of military service in my family's history, and I never had considered it for any reason before this. And even when I was in D.C. before I left to move to Nashville, there's a good buddy of mine, Mike Belinke is his name. He and I, he was a UVA guy. He'd sang in a cappella groups down there. We'd become good friends after college in the D.C. area, singing in church choirs, singing in local groups left and right, a cappella groups, you name it. And we had met a guy who was retiring from the Army Corps after like 30 years, and he had encouraged both of us to audition for the military choruses because he has a fantastic tenor voice. And this guy had heard us singing and was like, you guys should really consider auditioning for one of the military choruses. And we both were like, yeah, no thanks. That sounds like not fun at all. I'd actually seen the Army Chorus and the Senior All-State Chorus when I was in high school, and they seemed very stiff and stodgy at the time, and I said, oh, I wouldn't want to be part of that. Who'd want to be part of that? And so I kind of threw the idea out of my head, and then sure enough, like 4 years later, I was in Nashville, and Mike, the guy I just referred to, he actually auditioned for the Navy group, got in, and was like, this is one of the best jobs in the world. This is great. You should consider this. And I said, well, keep me posted if a bass position opens up in the chorus. And about 6 months later, it did. And so I auditioned for the job and won. I joined the Navy specifically to do this job in the Navy, which is to be a musician with the Navy band. However, now that I've been in the Navy for almost 15 years, I absolutely believe to my core that this is a pretty awesome way to do what I love to do, which is music and singing, right? And to get paid to do it and have a decent living, but also I get to serve my country. And it sounds, you know, it can sound a little cheesy, but you really do, you know, it's, there's something to be said for the, I might not be standing on the front line, like taking a bullet, obviously. And I'm not out there at the hands of an aircraft carrier or a jet, you know, or in a tank, but I am supporting, you know, our nation's military efforts on a much different level, on the sort of PR side / protocol side. And, you know, I'm serving my country in my own way, and I am proud of that. So I wouldn't have considered joining the military, I don't believe, if it weren't for this unique opportunity. But now that I'm in the Navy, and I've been in the Navy for 15 years, like, I get it, and I'm very glad that I did it. I have no regrets. It's been pretty great.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's been said that we don't do enough of the old stuff or the standards. So this next one is for all you original hipsters out there. That's right. Put your mittens around your kittens as we bring to you this holiday wish. Dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know, where those treetops listen and children listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow. The snow. Well then I am dreaming of a white Christmas, with every Christmas card I write. May your days, be merry and bright. And may all your Christmases be white.
What have been some of the coolest performance opportunities that you've gotten through the Navy?
Oh, Oh man, we get that question a lot, and it's because there's so many to choose from. Probably the number one memory I'll have, at least up to this point, and there's a whole bunch, but when President Obama was elected in, 2008, and his inauguration was in January of 2009, we, meaning the Navy Sea Chanters, we were invited or asked to sing at that event. So we do stuff at presidential events all the time. That's like our job. That's our description as a presidential support unit. So I sang at George Bush's second inauguration. I sang at Obama's first inauguration. I've sung at presidential funerals, Reagan's funeral, Ford's funeral. I've done all kinds of crazy things. I've been in the White House probably 35 times singing for the president. It's cool. But the highlight of them all was President Obama's inauguration, because if you remember, and I'm sure you do, that inauguration was a uniquely spectacular event. We were up on the top of the Capitol building, way up high. You know, he and everybody else was beneath us. Like, they were down about a level or two underneath where we were. And you could not see a blade of grass. I mean, there were so many people there. And the emotion of the day was so positive and so earth-changing that it was quite a big deal to be there. It was spectacular. I mean, the gravity, you know, the gravitas of that event is really unparalleled. So that's got to be one of my highest highlights of my career thus far with the Navy. But there's so many I can't even begin to describe.
You get to see a lot of games and stuff too.
Yeah. Actually, I've sung. Yeah, I've probably been to about a dozen NAS games where I've been performing as part of the Navy, and I've done two where I was singing a national anthem or God Bless America by myself. So sometimes we're there with the whole chorus. Sometimes I've been there with the quartet. Sometimes I've been there by myself. Ironically enough, as a big Redskins fan, we have not done any Redskins games yet, and that just really pissed me off. For whatever reason, FedEx Field is all about using the Air Force guys and the Army guys. They just refuse to reach out to the Navy guys. But on that same note, the New York Giants, we don't know why, but the New York Giants up in the Meadowlands has requested my group for the last 3 years to drive up to New York and perform at a halftime show. And we just did it actually.
Well, yeah. Maybe you should switch over. Maybe
no way,
time.
Man.
I'm a lifelong Giants fan, so.
Are you really? Wow. There's no chance I'm going to switch, but you'll appreciate this. We just played the season opener for the Giants this season. We drove up to New York, and I sang, I don't know if you know that One Republic song called I Lived, but, you know, it was a big top 40 hit a few years ago. We did that and another tune in the halftime show, and that was my big solo. So that was kind of neat, because that was the first time I had soloed in an NFL stadium in front of about 60,000 people. And of course, it was during halftime, so half of them weren't even paying attention. But that was pretty neat, and that just happened like a month and a half ago. So yeah, I've done some cool stuff. About 3 years ago or 4 years ago, myself and three other dudes. Quartet of the group, we did the national anthem at the Baltimore Ravens game, and it was the season opener for the NFL. So it was a Thursday night game that was nationally televised. So everybody and their mother, you know, was watching that game. And that was a cool moment, because got a lot of play off that one for sure.
Yeah. I got to say, every time I've seen you out there, you know, doing it, it gives me, you know, a lot of pride for my Valley and Reston pride. You know,
yeah,
going
man.
Way back to just see you out there doing so well, knowing that we kind of like started off together in chorus.
Yeah, man, definitely. I mean, yeah, anytime you see anybody from your hometown, you know, like, you know, doing something great. I mean, like, I think about, you know, like Ethan Berlin is, you know, moving and shaking out there in L.A., I believe. And then I saw like Tara Coleman is like all over Facebook, like doing stuff with her nutrition stuff, and like, you know, Gordon is doing the cool stuff up in Napa Valley with the wine, and like, you know, there's like so many of us that are like, you know, doing our own thing, and it's so fascinating to see where, you know, which industries people have gone into or what fields, and like sometimes they've found opportunities to get a lot of public attention or quote unquote, you know, pseudo fame for what they're doing. Other people couldn't care less if, you know, if they had any public attention, but they're just super happy doing what they do, and that's all that matters, right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, no. I mean, it's exciting to see anybody, you know, from that you know from way back doing really well and being successful in all kinds of fields. You know,
yeah.
You mentioned Ethan before. Ethan just wrote like a children's book.
Yeah.
And
yeah, he did.
You know, to be able to like buy that book on Amazon and then read it to my daughter. And it's just a really cool thing, you know. Like we all went to Sunrise Alley together, you know. We always knew we've been doing like skits and stuff with Ethan, that Ethan was like really weird and really funny and entertained all of us, you know, as kids.
Yep.
And that oddball sense of humor is still serving him well and still still entertaining tons of kids.
Oh yeah, he was destined to do something like that, that's for sure. Yeah, isn't his book called like The Hugely Woodly Spider or something like that? I haven't picked it up yet, but yeah, I saw that too, and I was following from afar because that's just great. Yeah, no, I agree.
It's, well, your kid will be old enough soon for it, and you'll have to get one.
Yeah, he'll be two on Halloween, so yeah, I agree. I'll definitely pick up a copy to read to him. That's for sure.
So, performance wise. You know, you got to sort of live out those Billy Joel dreams, I imagine, a little bit through Gonzo's nose. That gave you more of a chance to really be a performer.
That is true. That is true. And it's funny, you know, you just said that. I have to pause and tell you this story. About 10 years ago, Billy Joel came to the Navy Yard, which is where I work, you know, in Southeast D.C., to do a random, like, leadership talk to one of the Navy sort of installations that happens to be right near our building. And they used a space in our band building for him to deliver this talk. And we had this unique opportunity where to start the event, they had a request that somebody sing the national anthem before Billy Joel gave his talk. And this was really like one of those VH1 storyteller things where he'll sit behind a piano and talk about stuff and then demonstrate by playing. You know, he talked about his process or, you know, whatever. And when the operations department got that request, it got filtered down to one of the sea canters, and it was supposed to be assigned to somebody else. But one of my friends said, wait a second, Webb's a big Billy Joel fan. Let's ask if he wants to do it. And I said, hell yeah. And so I actually had the opportunity about 10 years ago to sing for Billy Joel right before he came out to do this little leadership talk thing. And that was pretty freaking awesome, I'm not going to lie. So, you know, I did this, you know, just a cappella national anthem, and then I sat down, and I was allowed to stay and watch. And he came out, and as he was walking out, his manager, who I guess is one of his longtime associates, was standing there, and he saw me sing. And as I came to my seat, the guy walked by and looked at me and gave me a look, and this whole, you know, approving head nod, like, nicely done, dude. And then Billy Joel sat at the piano and did his spiel, and I got to sit there and watch Billy Joel from about literally 15 feet away, talk about his songwriting process, his career, how he navigated throughout his career. And he played in front of us, and it was awesome. It was great. He played Piano Man, and I'm not going to lie, I was choking back tears because, you know, I was in the same room with this guy, you know, who was my childhood idol musically, and it happened. So anyway, that's a bit of an aside, but back to your original point, Gonzo's Nose was awesome. I did that. That was back in 2008. One of my college friends named Mandy, she was singing in cover bands in the area, and through the scene, so to speak, she had heard that they were looking to replace the lead singer because he was living in Charlottesville. His name was Adrian, and Adrian had been doing it for like 13 years or 12 years, and he needed to sort of hang it up. And they'd been looking for, I think, like 9 months to a year to find a singer, and they were having no such luck. And so she knew that I was learning to play bass at the time. I could already play guitar and sing and everything. And I was talking outwardly with my friends, including her, about trying to maybe do some sort of songwriting stuff with some people in the area. Like, I was looking for an opportunity to do more than just the Navy job. And she said, hey, you should audition for these guys. They're really looking for someone. And I'm a bass singer. Like, I don't sing high stuff. I can, but I did not make a habit of singing like Guns N' Roses or Steve Perry or even Matchbox 20, even stuff that's not particularly high. But
well, listen,
a lot higher.
Listen to your speaking voice. You know, you have a low voice.
Yeah, I do. And so my what I do for a living with the Navy is I sing bass parts, and I've always been that way, right? That's what I studied when I was in college. So the notion of trying to sing in a bar band, you know, doing top 40 and pop rock stuff, it was scary to say the least. But I took her advice, and I was like, you know what? All right, fine, I'll audition, because as she described it, you know, this is Gonzo's Nose. Like, they're in Maine. They've been playing in the D.C. area for, you know, 13 years at that point or whatever it was. Like, you step into a band that's established, that has, like, regular gigs, that's making decent money. You know, this is something that if you stepped into, my God, I mean, what a cool opportunity. So, I didn't really think much of my chances or of myself, but I said, okay, I'll check it out and see what happens. And long story short, I auditioned for them. I was honest with them and said, hey, man, this might be out of my range, but let's see what happens. And they really liked my singing ability, but they could also tell that I wasn't very used to singing, like, quote-unquote, grittily. You know, I wasn't used to doing rock and stuff. But I did my best, because I'm a kind of a chameleon where I can sort of shift and change my voice as needed. So they took a chance on me, and it was like 2.5 months later with our first gig at Med Divine's in Centerville, believe it or not, which is now closed and has been closed for many years. And I got up there and I did a 3-hour set, you know, two 90-minute sets with a 30-minute break. And I was scared as hell. I didn't know if my voice was going to hold out. I didn't know if I was going to be able to get through 3 hours of singing that kind of crap in a bar with, you know, loud music and smoke and drinking and stuff, because I haven't done that kind of music. And sure enough, I got through it, and I ended up loving it, and it was great. And we had a nice long run. Gonzo's was thriving until my wife got pregnant, and I told the band, I was like, look, guys, I'm going to have to get out when my kid comes. You guys don't have to quit, but I'm not going to put myself through that schedule where I've got a baby, an infant at home, and I'm not getting home until 3 a.m. in the morning on Fridays and Saturday nights. Like, I'm not going to do that to my wife, and I don't want to do that. And they completely understood, and they decided that, you know what, we've been doing this for 20 years now anyway. We ended up doing almost 21 years. And they said, let's just hang it up. And so that's what happened. But I was part of the band for 8 years, and it was a blast. It was a real blast.
What were your favorite scenes to cover, or were there any songs that you brought to the band where you were like, I've always wanted to do this or this?
Oh yeah, Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. We all did that. That's the cool thing about being in a cover band is that you can sort of like just pick and choose what songs you want to do to an extent, of course. Man, I don't know. I love doing a bunch of songs. I think some of my favorites that we did over the years, I enjoyed the ones where I got to play guitar, too. Like, I played guitar in addition to singing. We did a lot of acoustic tunes, and then we did, several electric tunes. I bought a Les Paul standard, just so I could have a decent guitar for the band. And that was pricey, but it was cool, right? Because then I had a nice guitar to play, and it was a write-off anyway. Whatever. But I think probably my favorites were, like, we would do Sweet Child O' Mine, Guns N' Roses, and that was fun because it's not easy to sing Axl Rose, as I'm sure you can guess, and I don't think I did a particularly great Axl Rose, but I did a very passable Axl Rose. And that was a cool tune because everybody lost their shit when we played, Sweet Child of Mine. Even though it's cliched, it's all get out, people still love it. And my guitar player, Adam, was great. He could play the solo, perfectly, just like the record, and nail it every time. And that was always fun, a cool highlight to do. We did a Buck Cherry song, Crazy Bitch, which I don't know if you're familiar with, but one was fun. That one was fun just because it was crazy and out there, and I got to like act like a rock star for a second. I really enjoyed doing some acoustic tunes, and playing. And then of course, I don't know, man, I'd have to go through and look through our sets. We did about 40 to 45 shows a year, every year that I was in that band. So that's a lot of gigs. And, we did, different sets for every show. So I don't know how many tunes we had in our set list, but it was easily in the, 500 songs that we could do. Now, they weren't always fresh and ready. We had to dust the cobwebs off of a lot of them, but we had 250 to 275 songs that were in heavy rotation that we could do it without at a moment's notice. But I don't know.
That's impressive.
We did so many. Yeah, man. Well, I mean, it is because most bands don't have anywhere near that many songs, but that's, I was lucky, man. I mean,
no, 15, 20 usually at most.
Yeah, I mean, we had hundreds of songs we could do, and it's because I stepped into a band that had already been around since the late 90s. I mean, Gonzo's Nose started as a William & Mary graduate band. Everybody in the band was a William & Mary grad back in the late 90s, and then over the years, it slowly turned over. And by the time that I was in it, the last iteration of the band, you had me, who was a JMU grad, you had the guitar player, who was a Tech grad, the drummer was the only original member left, and he was a William & Mary graduate. Bass player was a dude from Sweden who was infinitely talented, Andreas. And then our female singer, Jen, was from Ohio. So it was a very eclectic mix by the end. But you had all those years of experience, and they'd been building up a set list since the 90s. So you can imagine. I mean, unlike most bands, that was another thing that was cool about Gonzo's Nose. A lot of bands will learn their 15 or 20 or 30 songs and then just kind of rest on their laurels. Even when I joined in year 13 of the band, they had a sort of the MO was every month we're going to learn two or three new songs every month. And we rehearsed every week. We rehearsed one night a week every week, even if we had two shows that weekend. And because of that sort of dedication to craft, if you will, and to building, expanding the set list, that's why after all those years, there was hundreds and hundreds of songs that band had played. Even if they'd been retired and hadn't been played for 10 years, they were still there. And if we really wanted to, we could relearn them and pick them up and dust them off again. But, it was a very professional, very driven cover band. And, that combined with the talent and the work ethic is why that band played for over 20 years, and we were still, not to toot our own horn, but, we were still in really high demand when we quit at the beginning of 2017.
What do you think essentially of the DMV rock scene and the club scene around the area?
Oh man, well that's a whole other story. I think I can speak from experience. The cover scene, okay, which is obviously it's a subset of the overall scene. But the cover band scene is strong in D.C. There's a lot of really good, I say a lot, but there's at least several really good bands that regularly gig in the D.C. area. the cover scene, I think, is stronger than most city scenes, and the fact that, like, if you're a good cover band in the D.C. area, you can actually pull down, you know, decent money from doing bar gigs and clubs. I know that the other cities like New York, Philly, you know, Atlantic City, all this, the Mid-Atlantic region scenes, there are some really good full-time bands that travel up and down the East Coast all the time. And they have commented that the pay and the venues in the D.C. area, at least for a while there, were really good compared to a lot of the other cities in the area. I do know this. If you go to, like, New York City and you want to do a cover gig up there, you could have guys that are just as good, if not better, than any of the dudes in D.C., but they're making half the money that you can make in D.C. Now, what does that mean? It probably means that New York is a city that appreciates original music, you know, original acts more than, say, the cover band scene. But I think the D.C. scene, there's just a lot of, you know, young professionals that are living in Arlington and Clarendon and you know, in D.C. and U Street Corridor, all those places. And they want to go, they're willing to pay a cover to go see a band that's playing music that they already know. Is that the best for creative growth and, like, unique artistic identity to a city? Maybe not. But you still got places like the 930 Club. You still got the, the Jefferson in downtown D.C. There are still some cool, like, unique, like, to D.C. venues to go see a good, like, what is it, the U Street Music Hall. Like, there's still places where you can go see good bands that are coming through or that are being homegrown in D.C., but I don't know an inordinate about that kind of scene right now, but I do think that the music scene is alive and well in D.C., depending on which side you're looking at.
And so moving forward, I mean, your kid is two now, not an infant, you know, in the toddler stage. The band is defunct, but you're still going strong with the Navy. You know, what do you still want to accomplish, you know, musically? What things do you have, like goals, or are there any other, you know, aspects of music that you haven't touched on yet that you would like to maybe apply yourself to in the coming years, since you'll have a little bit more time, maybe.
Yeah, hopefully. We'll see. That's a good question, man. I don't know. I honestly, you know, like the band, Gonzo's, we just did a reunion show. We actually did two reunion shows this year in 2018. We did Friday Night Live out in Herndon, which is one of those outdoor free concerts they do in the summer. And we had a blast. And we did Terrara Winery in Leesburg, which is one of the big places to go see bands in the summer. And both those gigs were amazing and really well-received, hugely popular, really satisfying. So I wouldn't say, although I don't think it's happening and we don't have anything planned, I think it's very... And there's a good chance that in the coming years, maybe once or twice a year, Gonzo's will throw up a good old times reunion show. But I don't know for sure. Outside of that, my musical goals, you know, coming up to 15 years of the Navy band. My wife has a good, strong, promising career path for herself. And when I hit 20 years in the Navy, if need be, because of the sake of her career trajectory, then I'll retire from the Navy, you know, get my military pension. And then I'll move on from that. If I can stay longer in the Navy and we can stay in the D.C. area, then I'll do that. But more specifically to your question of what else can I do musically or what are my goals? Well, if I end up getting out of the Navy, so my day job won't be music anymore, that's a really interesting thing that I'm thinking about for years. I didn't mention this, but about, was it 4 years ago now or 3 years ago, one of my buddies who was in the Navy with us for one enlistment and then left to join the Metropolitan Opera up in New York. He sings at the Met as one of the chorus members. He encouraged me about 3 or 4 years ago to audition to be in the Met chorus, which, again, I was like, really? I'm not an opera singer. I can fake it, but I'm not really an opera singer. And he's like, well, just try out and see what happens. So I did, and they offered me a job to sing at the Met that fall in one of their operas they did. That was Die Meistersinger by Wagner. And it's this long 7-hour crazy opera that has a crap ton of singers that go on stage towards the end to do these, like, this whole third act. And I was offered the opportunity to do that. And I was able to work it with my Navy schedule, and I did it. So I went up to New York City starting in September of 13, I guess it was, or 14. And I think it was 14. And I went up there 27 times, so between September and December, for rehearsals and for performances. We did eight performances. I just tell you that to say that it was a very unique experience. I got to sing at the Met Opera. That was pretty awesome. I got to sing in front of some of the most famous conductors in the world and sing with some of the best opera singers in the world. And it was great. But I felt a little bit like a fish out of water. But afterwards, it was explained to me in no uncertain terms that if I really wanted to audition again, I might eventually get a full-time job at the Met. I would consider doing that, except my wife and I don't really want to move to New York, and the schedule is kind of crappy if you have that job. You get paid very, very well. You get paid, like, obscenely well when you're at the Met, but you work your butt off. And so if I don't do that, which is what I'm getting at here, long story short, if I don't even try to go back to doing that, honestly, what I think I'm going to do when I get out of the Navy is be a pilot. And I know that's a completely 180-degree term, but I have a pilot's license. I just earned it in the last, like, 6 months. And I just finished my instrument rating, and I'm about to begin my commercial pilot training. So to be truthful with you, when music kind of runs its course, my second, quote-unquote, second career, I think, will be as a pilot in disguise. Now, maybe I'll sing to my passengers. I don't know. But that's honestly what I'm focusing more of my attention on, is being a pilot, randomly.
Well, regardless, you know, you've already accomplished so much in the music world, like, just really an amazing amount in all kinds of different fields. You know, hearing you talk about this is really, like, what you've managed to do. You've kind of touched on almost everything that you can do as a singer.
Yeah,
you've done a little bit of everything, you know, opera at the Met, singing the national anthem in front of thousands and thousands of people, you know, at one of the biggest events in our nation's history, performing in, you know, successful rock band, singing, you know, a cappella, like, you've done it all.
I hadn't really thought of it that way, but yeah, I guess I kind of, yeah, well, I, yeah, I have. I've had a very, very lucky and very fruitful path in my music career, and I am so lucky. Like, there's universal truth. Like, a job is a job, right? And no matter how great the job is, there's always days where it feels like it's a job, right? And every time my colleagues, you know, complain about whatever our schedule may be or whatever hoops we have to jump through to do our job that day, I'm usually one of the first, not always the first, but usually one of the first to say, hey guys, let's remember this. We could be doing a desk job right now. You know, we could be doing this. Like, we're still doing music. We still have the opportunity to sing here for a living. And I never take that for granted at all. So yeah, I agree with you. And I feel extremely lucky of the opportunities that I've had, and I'm sure I'll continue to have via the Navy or other avenues, because I don't think I'll ever step away from music completely. I tinker with my own, you know, my little singer-songwritery original stuff. I've never really recorded it, but I've been thinking about it just for my own sort of satisfaction to get some stuff down. But whether it's singing in choruses or, you know, church choirs or professional choirs or a cappella groups, you name it. Yeah, I agree. Music will always be part of my life, and it's already been a huge, huge, obviously, driver of my career. But, yeah, I hadn't thought about it that way, but you're kind of right. I'm super lucky with the bottom line.
Out of the smoke, see a ray of hope, one pale thin ray reaching for the day. We can build a beautiful city. Yes, we can. Yes, we can. Not a city of angels, but we can.